65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State, and here are your hosts, Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Good afternoon. Back
you
together
are back.
Again. You're back. We haven't been together since Thursday.
Well, you know what they say about absence.
Doesn't make the heart... Is your heart more fond
My
towards me
heart
now?
Is always fond. Always fond to be here. It's weird, though. I've been getting a lot of odd texts. About yeah, I thought at first they were from you, but then I knew you're not in Yemen. I knew you were still in Wisconsin. So a lot of weird stuff going on.
A lot of weird stuff going on. So we are going to talk about that today at the very top. But
yes.
What else do we have coming up today? It is indeed Giving Tuesday. So today we are going to be talking to Tiffany Tardy, who is the CEO and president of Pearls for Teen Girls. Very excited that this has been an organization that's been around for 30 years, and they've served over 12,000 girls
wow.
in Milwaukee. So really looking forward to that conversation.
And there have been countless articles and opinions about teens on social media, especially young girls. There's what effect does it have on them? The only thing that's been missing in that conversation were the actual young girls themselves.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Kate Phelps from UW-Madison has changed that. She's got a new book out called Digital Girlhood, where she actually talked to adolescent girls. So we'll talk to her about her findings at 2:15.
Lots of teenage girl talk today.
Listen, I'm all about... Never mind. Strike that. Let's move on.
But speaking of teenage girl talk, who are typically texting one another or snapping one another,
yes.
I guess it could have been worse if it had been on Snapchat. but, you know, those messages also disappear. But...
Allegedly.
It is truly like a Veep storyline coming out. It's the news broke while you were on air yesterday.
Yes, and I made a similar goofy joke right because it happened right during the 2 o'clock news. So
okay.
I was scrolling through, and it's another one of those headlines that's so stupid you can't believe it. The editor in chief of the Atlantic was invited to the group chat where. The defense
on Signal,
secretary, on Signal,
which is a nonprofit encrypted app where conversations disappear. So, like, journalists
yes.
use this a lot with sources because it's safer than just texting one another.
But it also can be hacked pretty easily, and Russia has been trying and successfully hacking it for a while.
Okay.
Anyway, Pete Hegseth, Marco Rubio, Tulsi Gabbard, they're all
Mike
on
Waltz.
This chat. Mike Walls, everybody's on here. We're talking about attacking Houthi rebels in Yemen, and somehow the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic gets an invite to this chat from either Mike Walls or somebody on his staff.
Yeah.
And... is in there, and he, of course, thinks it's a joke too. So I
or
did
like
too.
A disinformation, like
yes.
like a ploy to embarrass him,
yes.
right? As far as this is AI or this is a joke. This is like he's very skeptical at first that this is an actual conversation
yeah.
from the people, the actual representatives involved.
Because he said, "I've never been invited to a meeting like this, as I shouldn't, and why would I be invited to one now on an app?" So it broke yesterday. It is turned into what can only be described as one of the biggest national security screw-ups that I can remember. And at first, you know, the administration, no, this isn't right. Then the National Security Council said, yeah, this is legit. He did see these things. And thankfully... for all of us.
No American lives were... Well, he withheld
no
it, but also...
He withheld it, yeah. Goldberg decided he wasn't going to do it. He didn't reveal all the contents of some of the messages because he said that it would put too many people in mm-hmm. danger, which is terrifying that these people in this position and this... All of that was fact, as reported by AP and every other news organization. This is my editorial. How could they be that stupid and amateurish?
And that was the thing, as I was reading the Atlantic article from Jeffrey Goldberg and him kind of explaining day by day from when he was mm-hmm. first added and his skepticism over what was real and what wasn't real. And truly, until it was announced that the attack had happened,
yeah.
was really when he finally realized that this was a legitimate conversation that he was had access to.
Yeah, as he's watching these texts and then seeing the reports of what's going on.
And the thing that I think it should be a flag to everyone is the fact that there was 18 national security officials in that group chat, and at least from what Jeffrey Goldberg had access to, not a single one said anything along the lines of, should we not be doing this on Signal? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's not even
right.
like what was, there was, there wasn't even, which makes me think that there's other conversations happening on Signal across departments or across other national securities that said that this was already a normal way to have these conversations, that no one from the get-go was like, hey, shut it down.
Well, and they talked about Europe not paying in and being deadbeats. And then they were, after the attacks, they were sending emojis of the flag and fist bumps. And so nobody obviously thought that this was a bad idea. And I know this is simplifying it, but if you've seen any mob movie, you don't put anything in writing. You don't talk on the phone.
Well, I heard mom for a second. I was like, oh, no, he means mob.
My mom doesn't talk on the phone either. Nothing in writing.
You've seen The Wire.
That's right.
Talk in person.
but if you're dealing with national security, I don't know how this happens. And I don't know how everybody, like you said, one person being stupid, all right. But the whole group, are they all that dumb?
And
who's JG? Like, when we have a group chat, there's three names on that group chat, sometimes four. I know all the people involved in that chat.
If I just added a random 414 number to our group chat, I'm pretty sure you'd pause before you start saying show secrets.
Yeah, oh, well, listen, it's very, a lot of show secrets.
All right, well, one question I want to ask when we come back.
Yeah.
Because you and I are not immune to jokes. To making, bringing levity to situations.
Sure. If you don't laugh, you cry.
And there is, the internet had a heyday with this yesterday, with the memification of what happened. And I don't know if that is the right or appropriate response. And I don't, had someone actually been killed, I don't think that would have been the response.
And
but
we should say other than the rebels.
Yes. But like, had American lives been lost because of this breach? And so is it, like, what are we doing to our ability to escalate situations when they're this serious, when we keep memifying politics? So we'll get into that after this on Spanning the State.
It's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. And if you've been paying attention to the news whatsoever, you are probably already familiar with the fact that yesterday afternoon, just around 2 p.m. Central Time, The Atlantic posted what is probably, at least in my lifetime, and I'm on the younger side of things, but the most insane story I have ever read about U.S. national security, where 18 different national security advisors or leaders were in a group chat on an app called Signal talking about the strike that they had planned against the Houthis in Yemen. And the editor of The Atlantic was in the group chat.
Yeah, I will say he was very smart. He kept quiet. He just kept watching this roll in. Because as you mentioned at the outset, he didn't believe this was happening. Just like most of us didn't believe it when we heard the story come out yesterday. We all thought that this has got to be some sort of fishing expedition or some sort of... Nobody can be that dumb. It's a... My mom always used to say, how can educated people be that stupid?
Well, it's funny because to a certain extent, we can be that dumb, right? Like,
I guess
any of us have, when the stakes are much lower, but like adding the wrong person, sending a text to the wrong Brian. How many Brians do you know? How many Mikes do you know? Like, my favorite story is my best friend is named Mike.
Okay.
My husband is named Mike. Now my boss is named Mike. So that's a lot of Mikes in my life.
Mikes.
But when I first started dating my now husband, multiple times I thought I was texting him and I texted my best friend. So then I just had to separate and I had to change both of their names in my phone. So like mistakes like that happen as like human error, which is why you have these conversations in person.
Yes.
Right? I feel like that is the
but
thing.
But if you're texting your boyfriend or your boss, it's different.
That's the stakes being different.
That can be excused. This can't be excused.
So this is my question, because the internet had a field day, is having a field day, right? I don't know if Jon Stewart did this last night, because he always does Mondays for The Daily Show. So I don't know if they changed it up and did this last night. I have to imagine some of the other late night shows covered this last night. The memes across the internet, very funny. My favorite one so far is a meme of Big Bird sitting in a room of with executives,
yeah,
and it being like just labeling it JG. It's like there's some one of these is not like the other. Or if anyone's watching White Lotus, the meme of
Walton Goggins, Sam Rockwell,
yes, of him listening and being like, but that's not even just from the lay people on the internet. There's also Democrats, like elected Democrats, who their response to this is to put out a meme. And my thing is, had anyone actually been killed? Had an American soldier been killed because of some kind of security breach? I don't think maybe some people would still be making jokes, but I don't think. I think it's because the fact that nothing more serious happened that people feel as comfortable as they do making this into a punchline. But in reality, this could have been so much worse. And so, are we doing ourselves a disservice by leaning into the stupidity and, the parts of it that are absurd and making jokes out of it instead of harping on the fact of how dangerous and how, scared that maybe we should be as far as our security being compromised?
I think there's a couple ways to look at it. One, the Democrats are accused all the time of being hysterical. Oh, they have Trump derangement syndrome. And this story comes out. And yes, thank God, no American service people were killed or injured in these attacks. So in order to not seem like they're falling for every bit of
bait
trouble that comes out of the administration, they're just, all right, we'll laugh at it. We'll use humor to point out the fact that we told you from the beginning these people were not qualified to be in those jobs, but they're there and we're going to laugh about it. I don't think lay people will ever stop anymore. We've passed the point of no return with the memification of society, as you said. It's to the point where I have to be first. If I'm one of these creators, I have to have the first joke out there. I have to be the first person out there without any regard for how serious this actually is.
Well, because our memories are short, was there a lot of people making jokes after the Trump's assassination attempt in July?
There were people making jokes because of the big coat
text. No, but that was a couple days later.
Out of the gate.
Sunday.
Yes, there were. There were people.
I know there were some people making very bad, distasteful jokes about, ooh, just missed.
Right.
Like that kind
Those
of kind stuff,
of jokes.
Which I would
There were
do
jokes.
Do not condone,
There were people
sorry.
calling it fake at that point, right away.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. The only jokes were the horrible ones about missing, that kind of stuff. As far as I can remember, there may have been, but see, in that instance too, we had a civilian who was killed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was, maybe people showed a little more restraint. Plus, if you're going on, there's a difference between mocking Pete Hegseth and Rubio and Tulsi, rather than if you start calling, you start making jokes about the president being assassinated, that's when you get a knock at the door from the Secret Service. So people may show a little more restraint just because they know this is more serious than
so
a joke.
You don't think the jokes lessen or soften the seriousness of the situation?
I do. I think in this situation, it would have been incumbent upon the Democrats to really, this is, if we only look at it in political sense, this is a chance for them to gain some ground. If we look at it as, hey, we need to protect the country, They need to be hammering this nonstop. This was not a joke. This is not cute. This is not a little screw up. Everything I've read from anybody who was in the military says that this is the kind of thing that gets you not only thrown in Leavenworth, it gets you tossed out of the service. There's a lot that goes with it. It's a serious, serious issue.
And that'll be the interesting thing as far as loyalty, protecting your own. Like, what will the accountability or the ramifications be for anyone?
Well,
Hegseth on down. Will Waltz get fired? I think that's kind of the next level to this. It feels like that should have been an immediate thing yesterday,
yeah.
But I've yet to see anyone take the blame.
Well,
for
we've
it.
Seen them circle the wagons already. The wagon. The president said Waltz has learned his lesson. Everybody's going against it's the Atlantic's fault. So we're not going to see anything, because even though yesterday everybody...
It's gaslighting at its finest.
Everybody admitted it happened yesterday, and now they're changing their tune. How dumb do they think the American public is? Don't answer that. I think we know. But, it's insanity.
All right. Well, we'll come back. Maybe we'll touch up more on this later in the show.
Yeah.
But for now, we'll do this, and then there's more.
It's Spin in the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. But we were talking about the joke, whether or not it's helpful to be joking about the fact that 18 national security officials were all in a Signal group chat together. And
yeah.
While it's easy to make fun of, because it does sound like a Veep storyline, if that weakens the argument of... This isn't really bad.
Yeah, and I'm all for making jokes about things. I think there is a time and a place to joke about most things. I'm not going to say everything,
yeah.
But most things you can make fun of. I think if you're just a regular person, like if you or I were to create a meme, that's fine. We don't have any control of the government.
Punching up.
Right, and we can do that. If you're an elected official, this is nothing to laugh about.
No.
And leave that off your social media. Get in there and actually do something about it.
All right. ABC News and local headlines are next. It's time for Giving Tuesday, a segment that we do every Tuesday where we introduce you to Wisconsin people and organizations that are advocating for causes and doing good across the state. Well, it's hard to believe that we're almost at the end of March.
I know.
Feels like we just started March, but indeed it is the end of Women's History Month. And so we thought we'd do at least one more group focusing on girls in the Milwaukee area. And for the past 30 plus years, Pearls for Teen Girls has served over 12,000 girls in Milwaukee. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
That is a lot of different girls. So they empowered them with self-development tools, guidance, and support to strive for better, brighter futures. And joining us now is Tiffany Tardy, President and CEO of Pearls for Teen Girls. Welcome to the show, Tiffany.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. You said it so nicely.
Well, so I didn't realize it was 30 years or 32 years. And so what was kind of the history of the organization and where, when it first got started?
Yeah. So our founder, Colleen Fitzgerald, who's still involved in the program today, saw a need back in the 90s of just spaces for girls and having conversations about what girls were experiencing. And I always say, imagine what life looked like for me then as a teenager, mm-hmm. And what life looks like today and why Pearls is still so relevant for our teen girls. But she saw a need, and there was this desire at this one middle school, Jackie Robinson, back in the day, and with this one group of girls, and then out of that birth Pearls. But it was just seeing this need in our community to hold spaces for our youth, and particularly girls, as they're navigating all the things that they navigate as teenagers.
Got it.
What did the programming look like at the beginning, and how has it evolved? And what's it look like today?
So Pearls was created by girls for girls, which is what's so cool. So there's a lot of threads that still continue with us today. So our first group established PEARLS, and PEARLS is an acronym. So it is personal responsibility, empathy, awareness, respect, leadership, and support. Mm-hmm. And those girls created the PEARLS promise that we recite every single meeting, every day, every convening of our girls in that one group of, 20-ish girls back then. And then they saw that the girls, they thought it was going to be this one-time thing, but the girls wanted to continue to come back. And so that's where it started to grow and build into these small groups over the period of time. So over those years, 30 plus years, we've served 12,000 plus girls, but we still have that same kind of traditional programming where we have weekly circle at our sites across the city of Milwaukee and greater Milwaukee, where girls can come together and have that peer support and development with each other, as well as professional staff members that are with them every day. And we have an intergenerational model. So we have teenage girls working with our middle school girls, with the professional team members. We have college students. We have, younger professionals entering into their careers that are working with those girls so that they can have that peer adjacent support, as well as that representation of folks that are, a lot closer to what they're experiencing than I would be today, right? I don't know much about what they're experiencing today on the TikToks and the, all the things that they're navigating, but some of their near peers do. And so they are able to build that support system within each other, as well as with the evidence-based curriculum that we have with our staff members that are constantly adapting and changing to what their needs are. So it's really cool to see that so much of what we had from the very beginning, we still are able to hold space for today. And then also the flexibility to make changes to adapt to all of the needs and experiences that the girls are having today as well.
So what is the, what's the criteria to join? What's the kind of the target demographic of who becomes a PEARL girl?
Yeah. So all of us, so PEARL serves all girls and gender expansive youth here in our city. And we serve girls 5th grade to 12th grade.
Okay.
And so we are working within certain schools and community-based organizations. So we have sites across the city. But then we have our PEARLS home base, which is our office space, which we serve girls Monday through Thursday in group for all grade levels, 5th grade to 12th grade. And any girl in the city of Milwaukee is welcome to come to those groups every single week, Monday through Thursday. And there's no criteria outside of wanting to participate in PEARLS. And we always say that it's a voluntary space. And so the girls who come to PEARLS want to be there and they come every single week. 98% of our girls would recommend PEARLS to a friend. 100% of our PEARLS graduates are high school graduates, or 100% of our high schoolers graduate high school. And, 98% pursue post-secondary education. So a lot of really cool opportunities for girls. And especially if you're thinking about all of the things that they can get involved with today, and it's a choice, right, to come to PEARLS group every week. So there's something special there.
Those are high numbers.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So obviously we pointed out the 12,000 girls that have been helped. What other impact has the program made outside of that in the community? What have the girls done?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So having so many young women and girls and who've become women go through our program, you see PEARLS in so many different spaces. And so we have entrepreneurs, we have, doctors and attorneys, and so much of this robust alumni base that, it's like, wow, like I table events and I love to do that on behalf of PEARLS in the community, because you'll hear so many either alum or parents of alum that are like, oh my gosh, I know this organization. It helped my daughter so much. Or I was a PEARLS girl. I just had a former alum who was like reciting our acronym. Like, I remember all of this and, I want my daughter to be involved. So there's, I think, a lot of impact in just one, helping build these future leaders in our city. And so many of them are within our community. But then also to be able to feel like the curriculum that we have around social emotional learning and mental health and, navigating challenging times and situations, like we look at the whole person. And so I think that we can talk about those data points, right? Like we have so many that have gone on to pursue all of these different careers and entrepreneurship, et cetera. But from my perspective, I think it's even more special of just actually teaching and empowering women to navigate the spaces around them and in the things that we're facing even today. I feel like our Pearls alum are, you know, really well positioned to navigate whatever comes their way, which from my point of view as a woman, is so powerful. And that's the real impact of, like, we have dynamic women across our state, across our country. Now there's Pearls alum all over, right, that feel empowered every single day.
Nice. So later in today's show, we're actually also talking to a author who wrote and interviewed young women, specifically like 11 to 13 on social media. And you also referenced the TikToks and stuff.
Yeah.
So as you see all of the good things that obviously come out of the program, but when you're working with the girls and all of the youth that's involved in Pearls, what are some of the bigger challenges that are unique to this day and age that you're seeing come up for them?
Number one is exactly as you said, yeah. It's the internet. and there's a whole lot that can happen behind a computer screen or a phone screen, right? And so the cybersecurity of it all, the cyberbullying, additional pressures and social pressures that come from, you know, seeing all of these images, I think have an impact on girls. And I also think the piece around, and I hate to say it, but post COVID, right? Like yeah. So much has changed in the way that we interact. And we, you know, tell the stories of some of our girls of like just how they, you know, may have become more antisocial or more introverted during that period of time, and how Pearls is being able to kind of breathe that life back into them again, which is super cool. But like thinking post-pandemic and just being able to help in the social spaces and the confidence spaces, I think is a huge area that we're working on, as well as a lot of the data coming out of the pandemic around one, academic challenges of girls. And we're not an academic program, but we are a support program. Every girl submits a SMART goal, a year-long SMART goal, and we just are their cheerleaders of helping them. And many of them, most of them now, we have them set academic goals of some sort. Like, I'm going to really work on this math that I'm struggling on, and like, we're going to be there with you, you know. And then when you meet that goal and you get that grade at the end of the year, we take them on our kind of goal party, which is an end of the year excursion. This year, they're going to be going to Mount Olympus, and they'll get to, you know, do all the things that they do.
That sounds all right.
And have fun, right? Because they set a goal and they hit that goal. And so those are the things that we try to do. And then the other piece I would note from coming today with our girls is around mental health and navigating all of the pressures, again, that we talked about, right, that we're seeing from the internet and other spaces, but like being able to regulate, being able to know that they have resources and support, that they're not alone, has been really powerful as well.
Tell us about the big event you've got coming up April 17th.
Yes. So we have our annual fundraiser gala on April 17th. It's at the Barrett Center. It is going to be beautiful. We're super excited. The theme this year is the butterfly effect, and really thinking about, again, all of the growth and development that happens in our girls. So we'll be telling all of these really cool stories of things that our girls are doing and accomplishing and the impact of Pearls. It's my second gala for Pearls in my time, in my role. And we're super excited just for all of the, it's a celebration for us. Yeah. Like I think there's so much work that goes into our programming team, to all of our other staff within the organization. And this is a really cool opportunity for the community to be engaged, for all of our donors and sponsors and supporters to really, and then our girls and their families and our site partners and the schools that we work with, to all come together and really celebrate the beauty and spirit of Pearls, and also raise some money.
Where can people get more information or find tickets for the event?
Absolutely. Pearlsforteengirls.com/ITL. It's Inspired to Lead. So Pearlsforteengirls.com/ITL. You can get all information that you need around ticketing, around sponsorships, around, you know, getting involved with Pearls. We're always looking for volunteers, mentors for our girls. Any ways that we can engage in our city and community, we want to do that.
Perfect. All right. Well, Tiffany Tardy is the president and CEO of Pearls for Teen Girls. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks, Tiffany.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
If you know of a Wisconsin organization you would like highlighted on Giving Tuesday, email us at spanning@wtmj.com. We can always use a little help from our
Make them laugh. Make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son.
A lot. You know I like Broadway musicals, so this is not a slam. A lot of them sound the same.
A lot of the older ones sound similar.
This sounded like almost like Be Our Guest. A little bit.
Oh.
Something else. There was something else that it sounded like. And there's certain notes that in every production I've seen, there's a certain cadence to Broadway musicals.
Certain it's a style.
Notes, that are always hit. And I don't mind it.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like the clues to a song where it's like, you know that this is the end. Like it can't end on like the wrong note where you're like you have another line, right?
Right. Something's gotta be going.
There's just certain rules I think with the style that is recognizable.
Do you ever play "This Is the Intermission Song"? This is the one that's taken us to intermission. Because I never look at like the song rundown and the playbills before the show. I just let it happen. And there's a point where I'm sitting there and I'm like, yeah, this is the song that's going to take us to intermission.
Yeah.
And I'm 50-50.
Oh, you're 50-50? I feel like it's always pretty obvious.
Yeah, I don't.
Seems
pay
like a big.
I've usually
company
slept
number
through the first act.
Oh, okay.
So I wake up in time for a song and I go, this is it. This is the one.
All right. Well, I don't know if you would sleep through this, but the Milwaukee Comedy Festival is having its 20th rendition this year.
Nice.
I did not know this. It is one of the longest standing, I think it's actually the oldest comedy festival in the Midwest.
Yeah, it was happening before
years.
Chicago.
Yeah, and it's one of the oldest in the nation. And so I saw this, and I was very excited for my friends who are involved with the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. Patton Oswalt is going to be headlining it this fall.
That's a good name.
Big get.
That is.
That is a big get. I really like Patton Oswalt.
I do, too. He's when I was in L.A. doing comedy and other stuff, he was like one of the OGs of the alt-comedy movement.
Okay.
You know, they'd be at one or two rooms in L.A., and it was, you know, like him and Janine Garofalo and Brian Pochette and those, you know, those kind of the alt comics, which I don't know how that name really fit, because the alternative to comedy is drama. So
yeah, so what does that mean, the alt comics?
Like, they were just, they had a disdain for, like, road comics or people who did setup punchline. They were just... this is what happened to me today, kind of stream of consciousness.
But different than Seinfeld.
Yeah, because it wasn't polished. It was just, they were just talking.
It's like Mark Maron type?
Yeah, Mark Maron was probably one of those. But see, Maron, I think, has set material. And now it's obviously, obvious Patton does.
Yeah.
He's really good. But it was a whole big movement. It was just, we're different than, it was a lot of people who weren't getting time at like, the improv or the
All right,
the
I'm going to go look up alt comedy and
alt
see
comedy,
what I can find.
See what, it's a
but
big
yes,
thing.
Tickets go on sale soon for the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. I've seen it before. They do a great job, and this is a great get for them. Welcome Patton Oswalt to Milwaukee.
We'll have to see if we can get him on here.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be back with Spinning the State on Spanning the State after this.